the future. You're listening to What's Left. We're just about out of time, but as we do at the end of each program, we tell you about events of interest to you, we hope, in the Boston area. And Mark's here. Why don't you start?
Well, the Massachusetts chapter of the National Lawyers Guild will present an event entitled The FBI and the Murder of a Black Panther, next Thursday evening at Northeastern University School of Law. The panel will feature Jeffrey Haas, the author of The Assassination of Fred Hampton, Geraldine Hines, Superior Court Judge, Sophia Elijah, Criminal Justice Institute at Harvard Law School, and King Downing, a member of the NPAP. That's next Thursday, November 18th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at Northeastern University School of Law, 250 Doxer Hall, second level in the new School of Law building. Entrance at 65 Forsyth Street. For more information, call 617-227-7335 or visit nlgmass.org.
Where do we go from here? That's not a rhetorical question. It's the name of a post-election forum taking place this Monday from 7 to 9 p.m. at Encuentro Cinco, 33 Harrison Ave in Chinatown. On October 2nd, the One Nation Working Together rally brought together an unprecedented progressive coalition in Washington. Nationally, One Nation plans to continue its collaborative efforts. The speakers at this forum represent local groups that collaborated on One Nation. The forum will assess the election results and their impact on social change movements and how these movements can respond together to the many challenges that we face. Speakers include a who's who of local activist organizations, including Juan Cofield with the New England Area Conference of the NAACP, Maria Elena Latona, an immigrant rights activist, Russ Davis with Jobs with Justice, Grace Ross of the Mass Alliance Against Predatory Lending, Steve Meacham of City Life Vita Urbana, Lou Finfer of Mass Communities Action Network, Enid Eckstein of SEIU Local 1199, Peter Brooks with the Watertown Citizens for Environmental Safety, Mike Prokosh with Fund Our Communities, Cut Military Spending 25%. That's a long name for his new group. And Mark Solomon of the Majority Agenda Project. This is sponsored by the Majority Agenda Project. It's next Monday, November the 15th from 7 to 9 p.m. at E5, 33 Harrison Ave, 5th floor, Chinatown. For more information, visit majorityagendaproject.org or call them at 617-482-6300.
And the Ethical Society of Boston will present John Miller, professor of economics at Wheaton College and contributing editor to Dollars and Cents magazine, this Sunday at 10:30 a.m. Professor Miller's talk is entitled Collapse, Crisis, and Change in the U.S. Economy. He will describe how extreme inequality and free market ideology brought about the continuing crisis of the U.S. and global economies, and how reducing inequality and combating free market ideology would help to get the economy moving in a positive direction. This event is free and open to the public. It's this Sunday, 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. at Spiegel Auditorium, 56 Brattle Street in Harvard Square.
And finally, Discover Roxbury and Haley House Bakery Cafe present the next installment in their History Speaker series, Jewish Roxbury, next Wednesday. From the turn of the century through the 1950s, Roxbury was home to a thriving Jewish community. Dr. Ellen Smith, Associate Professor of Near Eastern and Judaic Studies at Brandeis University, will speak on the history and important institutions of the Roxbury Jewish community, and State Representative Byron Rushing will comment on Dr. Smith's presentation, offering his perspective on the connections between the Black and Jewish communities in Roxbury. Beginning at 5 p.m., Haley House Bakery Cafe will be offering a traditional meal of matzo ball soup, latkes with sour cream and homemade applesauce, and honey cake. As well as its usual menu with vegetarian and vegan options. Dinner starts at 5, program starts at 7 at Haley House Bakery Cafe in Dudley Square next Wednesday, November the 17th. There's no charge for this event, but seating is first come, first served. And Discover Roxbury is a nonprofit organization that promotes the economic development of Roxbury through tourism. For more information, visit discoverroxbury.org. We are indeed out of time. The human beings are thanked for their patience tonight. As always, they are very, very patient human people. They'll be up in just a few moments. Please stay on this planet until then. The views and opinions expressed on this program have been those of the participants and not necessarily the staff and management of WMBR, the Technology Broadcasting Corporation, or MIT. We'll be back next week. Stay tuned. It's WMBR in Cambridge.
softly. Yes, with great softness, I'm Dr. Jalis Sakran, and I welcome you. The rhythms are somewhat irritating, and it is with a shared hardship of irritation that I welcome you. We are joined by Aurora. Aurora, welcome.
Thank you for having me on the show again today, Dr. Jalis.
Thank you for being here, Aurora.
And as always, the disturbing melodies melt into our brains, and yet we find reprieve, as today we found the glorious sunlight to bring us from the outward coldness and darkness, and to remind us where our center lies.
We do welcome you indeed, Aurora. We are also joined by Zoro, the numerologist. Zoro, welcome.
Thank you, Doctor. Thank you, everyone, all of our listeners. Welcome to the show. I must say, it has been a very relaxing week for me. Yes. I hope that your week is the same.
Unless, of course, you wish to experience a lack of relaxation, which from time to time can be very healthy.
Yes, we humans find a catharsis in many things.
Indeed, this is why we make those sad, sad songs. This is why we indulge ourselves in stories of pain and misery, for it allows us to go into another person and to feel those feelings in a very controlled way, and then allow your outer glee to burst forth.
Yes, I think I can feel the glee coming from this music. It is quite lively indeed.
And we are, of course, also joined by Erno.
Yes, I must say, I agree that the mutual irritation we all experience is the potion that binds us as one.
All those emotional experiences, the happiness, the irritation, the sense of loss, grief, all of those we experience so strongly, and yet when we do not feel them, we almost forget that they are there.
There is a lot of tension in this next music. It's a very tight pulling sensation I feel.
Indeed, I believe that the tension, this shared irritation, is critical for us to form a bond.
The pearl of our earthly experiences.
For how can we become a diamond if not under stress?
Yes, yes, I believe that the diamond comes from the rough.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the diamond, but the pearl, I understand, is the grainy, calcified mass.
The dregs of the ocean.
Indeed, indeed. How a brain similarly irritated over a long period of time by a confusing happening or a logical puzzle may similarly yield fruit in some beautiful gemstone. I recall a friend who was in a moment of confusion believed that knowing he that the vomit of the bee produced honey, believed that perhaps other insects may excrete substances which were similarly flavorful.
And what did he find?
That's pretty much wrong.
But maybe we as human beings, we should strive that our minds produce the honey, that the vomit of our brains becomes the treasure that we seek.
Yeah, I'm not sure, Erno, about this, but certainly it seems that the most valued experiences of one's life are those which at the time are most irritating, most
yes.
trying.
I believe the analogy I'm trying to make is that what we many times discard as garbage or waste indeed could be the most important products of our mind. The thoughts that we find to be meaningless could perhaps have the most value and the most meaning when we really look at them. In this sense, this is what I mean by the vomit of the mind.
Yes, and I think too that the lesson we may have from the pearl is that those things which we produce ourselves become of most value to us. And this is really the reason that we should have this personal soul-seeking mindfulness. Yes.
I must admit that during the previous discussion, my mind drifted off into my past experiences, and perhaps into the past experiences of us all, those which were painful, those which seemed like mental vomit. And indeed, I find in almost all of them great worth, for they have formed me, as I am sure they have formed all of us.
Have you found that, perhaps contrary to your original belief, the mental vomit is the most nourishing of thoughts?
They are like the bitter pill that one must take. They are like St. John's wort.
Yes, they They are the potions that allow us to become human. Even though we want to throw away the hardship, the pain, the irritation, and all other mental vomit, we must indeed keep it and become one with it, for in it is the essence of who we are. For how can we be human without pain?
I believe very strongly in this. I recall that many great thinkers have valued boredom, those long periods of time in which they were consumed by nothing, simply forced to endure some repetitive task repeatedly again and again. And it was out of these moments that their brain bore fruit, driven along simply by the need to fill the time with something other than itself.
I sense that you very strongly feel this in this moment, that these are not only reflections on the past, but on the present as well.
Sometimes I wonder if maybe the hardship and the stress in our life, just like physical vomiting, these mental bouts of vomiting can be cleansing, purifying, and perhaps to clean our souls we must go through these hard times.
Yes, this brings me back to this sensation of catharsis, which we may feel in many, many contexts. So I think I agree with this, yes.
And perhaps we can extend this into a physicality as well. I have found that many of my patients who came to me with the thought of biofeedback to help with migraines and those sorts of things, that upon vomiting, they immediately felt a great relief when experiencing this pain.
Yeah, I think there is a great deal of pressure to produce valuable things when one speaks, but often it is an important exercise to remove things that are of no value to... We do never blame oneself for excreting, for visiting the bathroom. And yet those things which are produced are of little to no value.
If you look at what is immediately produced, then yes, perhaps. But if you consider the effect of this action, you are cleansing yourself, you are relieving yourself of a burden, and in this way you are doing something so beautiful and so important.
The chaos becomes peace.
And we can all imagine, I think, if there was a world in which we excrete no ideas, this world is less of a meaningful world for us. It can be a challenge to have thoughts, regardless of if they have value or not, and it is worthwhile to practice to think even more than anything.
Yes, the potion of mixed human mental excretions holds the world together, for without it there would be nothing.
Yes.
There would be nature, of course. There would be... Things would move, but there would be no one to observe, no one to care, no one to love. And without that, is there really a world?
Precisely my point. I think that all these transactions between one man and another, it is necessary to see that some of them will necessarily appear on the surface to be of less than average value. But it is simply not true that we should not have those transactions.
Yes, the shared mental excretions are what are the embodiment of human interaction.
These interactions may also be with things, I believe, that are non-human. The interaction is made human simply by the presence of one human. I remember quite alarmingly the moments at which I first discovered meditation. Many of my friends later asked me, how is it, Dr. Jalis, that you became a practitioner of meditation? And I was ashamed to explain, but I realized later that it is important for others to have a context so they may also develop some part of their lives. And for me, meditation began when I purchased a solar calculator and being frustrated because there was an on button, but there was no off button. And how does one terminate a solar calculator?
I'm very, very sorry. That's quite an alarming situation to be in, I think.
It was very frustrating.
Perhaps it's not any one person's choice when to terminate. Perhaps that is best left to fate.
But you know, this calculator, it must lead a very... concerned existence. It must just go on and on until it expires.
Without ever knowing when.
Yes, yes.
Now, Dr. Jalis, how do you feel about this inauspicious beginning? Now do you, when you see a solar calculator, do you feel joy?
Well, I think that after so long and after having interacted with so many calculators, it simply becomes a tool.
Perfunctory.
Perhaps. Punctual.
But perhaps it is the metaphor for human existence. Perhaps we are all nature's solar calculators. We are pushed on without a choice, and we have no clue, no idea when we will go off.
Well, this actually works very well, for if you bury a solar calculator, then it can turn off. So perhaps this is why we bury our dead.
Yes, I think it would be quite alarming if the dead were to come back. It's a different world. I don't know if death would mean the same thing.
But all of us do come back. All of us turn into the trees and the insects. And we are ingested and digested by so many other creatures. And so our particles, our bodies melt into theirs.
And like the metaphorical solar calculator, we turn back on. And run through the computation of the universe.
Now, if anyone would like to share some traumatic experiences, or to just join our circle... The number is 617-253-8810.
Yes, please join in. Share your excretions and your computations, please.
You know, it's interesting. I think you can observe... a human being and his computations, as you say, and... his extinguishment. But you may also look at a greater group and see the same shape. So I am thinking right now about the planet Earth and its origins as the waste of some stars, and how it is a being of its own, and to think that perhaps one day it will be extinguished, but become part of another being, which may even be greater.
So much energy is lost. It's startling to believe the sun strikes the earth with more energy than all of civilization would need for a few days.
But once, while at a potionology conference, we were discussing what the most important potion in the history of humanity is, and the conclusion that the group reached was that the sun and its endless stream of photonic energy is without a doubt the most important potion, because from it all other potions are made.
It seems we have our first caller.
Caller, welcome.
Yes, welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for joining our circle.
It is our pleasure.
I was just listening, and Zoro, you brought up an interesting perspective about the universe and stars, and how even though as we are destroyed, we become part of something else. And this was a very tranquil thought to be thinking that after time, physically, I am still a part of other things.
Well, thank you, caller. Yes, I think it is quite a poetic image myself.
It may not be true. In a spiritual sense, it's not clear.
But really, how many things are clear?
I would say that the number is greater than six. But to be more definite is quite difficult.
I believe that anything that touches us, that guides us, any image that allows us to feel connected and whole, that is real.
I think the caller's question, it extends into this issue about is there an existence after death?
And all of us, all of us come up with different answers. All of us have different ideas.
And I wonder if perhaps our existence isn't already proof of existence after death, for we as living beings are all composed of the particles left by those who came before us. We are all potionic mixtures of previous living things. And without the previous life, we couldn't exist. So perhaps our life is the afterlife of another.
It is certainly an inspiring view. It makes one wonder, does that not imply that household appliances, similarly, they enjoy the same life after their existence as we enjoy after our own?
Well, I am not sure if they enjoy it or not. It is quite difficult in my experience to communicate with my appliances, although I have attempted it as such. I think that this question will remain unanswered for some time.
Now, caller, what do you feel within you is the correct answer?
I think that you hit right on the spot. for me, I feel that we must, perhaps our life is the afterlife. I mean, there is nothing to say that this is not the beginning, but It is not the end either.
So perhaps we are in a continuum of life. Perhaps we must not identify our lives as birth and death and everything between, but perhaps we are...
Something more secular.
Circular, yes.
I like to think that life is like a giant ocean, and we are always in the ocean, always swimming, but we only have a limited amount of time on the surface, but that doesn't mean we ever leave the ocean.
And you know, we also, in this modern age, understand the mathematics of infinity. Perhaps to say that there is an end or a beginning to anyone's life is not quite distinguishable.
From a numerological standpoint, infinity, it must mean so much and yet so little.
Well, you know that infinity contains all numbers, but it enjoys many other properties, which, from a numerological standpoint, are quite intriguing when you interpret them appropriately. For example, the infinite, you may take away any number, and it will remain infinite, and you may add that number back again, and it will remain infinite. But at the same time, if you take a number and you subtract it and add it and subtract it and add it an infinite number of times, there is no definite way to say what you have at the end of the computation. And so we see that infinity, it is still somewhat of a mystery.
Maybe the conclusion is that while we are all minuscule parts of the infinite whole, every minuscule part is integral to the infinity that is life.
Yes, I think so. Perhaps it is best to say that infinity represents the universe as we know it, and vice versa.
And even without the smallest part, the smallest rock, the universe would not be the universe we know.
It is true. Infinity is a scary thing to me. I think that one has to be somewhat cautious. There are not simple ways to define calculi at infinity.
I was just thinking about a principle in psychology about how the whole is equal to or greater than the parts of the sum, and there is something missing there. And the idea that maybe it is the infinity in between that makes the equation more balanced.
Well, I am not expert in the art and the science of psychology, but I think this is a very interesting suggestion, quite worthy of pursuit.
I think that there is something dangerous and large and baffling about infinity, like when one... When one... When one stares into space and realizes that one may simply be a fly crawling on the small globe which is flying into space and loses sense of the direction of the ground there is a moment when one fears one may fly off, fall into space.
You know, I have had a similarly alarming experience, actually, quite recently. I remember one night I slept quite well. I do not understand why, though, but when I awoke, I was at the wrong perspective with respect to my room. I could not see everything normally, and it appeared to me that I was on the ceiling because of the orientation of my skull. It was quite alarming not to have the sense of direction.
But once you learn to embrace security in yourself, in your soul, in your spirit, then physicality, cardinality, they will no longer be so vital. For when you allow yourself to look inward, to absorb yourself within, then you can reach out to the entirety of the universe that is contained within. For within you find yet another infinity.
That is a truly beautiful thought, to think that it is not about the direction or the orientation, but the location of our spiritual self.
Yes, I agree that we cannot know where we're facing, where we're going, but I believe we have an obligation to know where we are.
And sometimes solutions can arrive from very strange places. I recall the solution to the issue with the solar calculator, which of course, requiring no external power, the designer saw no need to include an off button. Do you, my co-hosts, realize the solution?
Well, I am no expert when it comes to a calculator, but if you really need it to go off, then I believe you may take out the batteries.
Well, I find that with all things, the solution is to press the calculator to your heart. For in darkness and in warmth, not only does the calculator turn off, but you find yourself at peace.
Mm.
See, to turn off the calculator for me, I would suggest to just wait for the clouds to come in.
Yes, I would agree that it is not our choice when the calculator goes off. We must continue computing until nature and fate make the decision.
All these wonderful and thought-provoking answers are correct, my friends. Truly, the obstacle was, in this case, my own impatience. Indeed, simply covering the calculator, depriving it of the nurturing warmth of the sun, did indeed help, but simply not pressing any buttons for several minutes resulted in the calculator.
So the solution is patience.
Patience.
It seems as though in your experience what has destroyed the calculator is actually the boredom which we spoke of at the beginning.
Indeed.
Perhaps the lesson of patience that you learned, I wonder, Doctor, did you later apply that to your meditation techniques?
Yeah, not directly, but certainly without a doubt.
Implicitly.
Indeed, it had an effect on my meditative direction. Yeah.
For patience, as in my experience, is very, very important to one's spiritual searching, spiritual spiritual guidance, for how can you effectively search your own soul if you don't have patience? It's not a straight road. It has many turns and corners and dead ends. Without patience, you can get nowhere.
And particularly, today I found that the great peace, the great serenity and joy and giddiness from something so simple as the presence of the fullness of the sun, it allows us to understand the need for patience so much more. Such a small, physical, important thing as the sun can really change your outlook, and so in the dim gloominess of the winter, patience and perseverance and calmness, tranquility, are required.
Something truly perplexing to me is the other meanings of the word patient in English. For example, a sick person might be referred to as a patient. Is it because being ill requires so much patience?
Or perhaps the doctors and nurses' wishes reflect that they want their patient to be patient.
I believe that the fragility of a patient requires his patience, yes.
I think also the other words having to do with medicine are strange. The entire operation, the building may be known as a practice, which always terrified me about.
Yes, I wonder when the real performance begins.
Or is it simply an acknowledgement that we are not experts?
Lawyers also have practices.
Somehow I mind less.
Perhaps it is to keep us humble, to remind us to be careful. And that relieves me for a doctor. For when he knows that he is practicing and not perfect, then he will take more of his time. And indeed, that is one of the things that people need in order to be happy, is a strive towards perfection. To try to improve some aspect of one's life. A skill.
I wonder, the word practice applied to this situation maybe is there to remind us that the world is not, it is not, as they say, a dress rehearsal, but at the same time, we don't know what our lines are, we never do, so life is at once a practice and the real thing.
But in the continuous view of life, perhaps each one of us is yet another practice.
We are all practicing for the next generation, you say?
Indeed. And perhaps in the end we can reach some tranquility, some beauty, some near perfection in one another. I believe that is one of the points of this show, to come together, to remind one another what we are striving towards, so that the human condition is not doomed to futility.
So that it will lead ever onward to the perfect harmonic dance of life, free of the chaos and bifurcations of the imperfect world.
You know, it is interesting, this word chaos. I think it is quite resonant with our experiences from day to day. I know that the world, to me, it seems quite chaotic.
I myself, I find that from moment to moment, I become more and more exhausted. And then I realize I'm not exhausted. I think to myself, if in a moment I might die, and what message I would give back, I'm not sure. If after one's death one could suppose that one died at this moment, now, what message would one deliver, and to whom?
Perhaps we should each share our individual messages. For me, it is to take things easy. That life is not so serious as you may think. And to be laid back and to just allow yourself to enjoy it and experience it. That way you can be happy.
If I have one message for myself and for everyone, it is that in life we may struggle to understand the external and sometimes to control it. But to find serenity, one must learn to be mindful of one's own actions and to look within and to see that there is much to know about yourself and that it is not automatic, yes. So this is my message.
And to whom?
I believe it is apportioned to everyone.
If I had to give a message to the people of the world after I had passed. In my life, I spent so much time trying to remove chaos from others' lives through whatever means necessary, and in my practice it was through the use of potions, but I would tell people that maybe instead of trying to remove the chaos, you find the order from within the chaos, for it is indeed hidden there. And I spent most of my life ignoring that, but now I know that sometimes the best solutions to the chaos of life is to pull the order out by its tail and make it apparent. And that is the only way you're going to find order in your life, is to make it and put it there yourself out of the chaos.
For myself,
if I were to share a message with the world, I think that it would be almost opposite of that. I would share not to pull the order out of the chaos, but to embrace it, to know that things are not perfect, and nor should that they be.
I wonder, isn't it our responsibility to strive for the perfection, for the order?
I do not believe so.
I think it is
not to strive for perfect, but to strive for something wonderful, and maybe chaotic is wonderful.
I think perhaps there is a common ground in this seemingly
divergent
view, which is that perhaps the effort to find perfection is simply an internal effort to accept that things as they are already perfect. In my own mind, if I had to deliver a message, I take a moment and I realize that there are people who could make changes in the world, but what an image of several ghosts lining at their door, each with a message to deliver. No, I actually, in a moment of humility about the combined potency of the human race, I believe that we can have no effect, that nature will simply take its course, ignore us, and so no message needs to be delivered.
I believe that when one becomes too far-sighted, when one looks at the wrong time scale, everything is futile.
It's not a matter of futility. It's simply a recognition that things as they are acceptable.
Now, I wonder, Doctor, you say this is in your own mind, but perhaps we can explore how things may be different if we are to consider the world from outside our own mind, from this perspective of others.
From others' perspective?
Yes, yes. If you were to hear advice at this moment, and anyone may feel free to answer, but what advice do you think that you would hear?
What advice would I hear from other people or from the many ghosts that have lined at my door?
Yes.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure that they would say anything to me.
Perhaps it is because we are not listening. I do not know if I would hear a message either.
Or maybe we are meant to discover that message for ourselves. Perhaps it isn't our right to have the message and the meaning of life spoon-fed to us by those who have passed and who have gone before us. Perhaps it is our job, maybe this is our responsibility, to discover this meaning for ourselves.
You know, I think it is interesting that the other hosts here and the caller too are perceiving that there is not a message coming. I think that in my day-to-day life, the absorption of the messages of others is not only routine, but important to the pursuit of perfection.
It may indeed be so. I'm once again unsure as to whether or not perfection is a thing worth pursuing. Just as it is that our time, unfortunately, is over, and where is perfection? Caller, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks also to Aurora.
Namaste.
To Erdno.
Perhaps it's not perfection, but the pursuit of perfection. And that we are not in vain.
Thanks also to Zoro.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks to the many callers who did phone, we were unable to reach this evening. I'm Edictor Jalis Sakran here on Music for Human, which is New Age Talk Radio with an emphasis on you, here every Friday at 7 on WMBR Cambridge 88.1 FM. Stay tuned for Radio Ninja. Ma'asalam.
fun and ride safe. Here's how.
A basement light, shoots a light at night. The stop signs apply to you, all right. Watch for the man sitting in his car. He's gonna kick that door ajar. Go with the flow, don't go the wrong way. Put that helmet on your head today. Well, all right, get on your bikes, ride safe.
From the Cambridge Bicycle Committee.
He came from outer space, to save the human race, A creature with a dream, to entertain the children of the night, The rest, as they say, became history,
Magogo, the show show, Saturdays, 8 Saturdays, WMBR, WE.1 FM, 88.1
Hello out there, Cambridge. This is L Train. Are you ready for 2 hours of car commercial music? I am. Welcome to Radio Ninja here on Friday night, 8 to 10 p.m. Check me out on Facebook for updates. You can friend Radio Ninja or be a fan or something.